Shiur is a continuation in the series of shiur that we were having on the subject of tefillah. The last topic we had covered was Kriya Shema, and one beautiful concluding item that I think there's very few people outside of those that have learned the Brisa Svarim that would know the answer to this question, or certainly would not know the answer that we're going to mention. The question being, why is it that for the Shema Yisrael, for that, those two sentences, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elkeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Eilam Vod, a Jew is supposed to put their hands over their eyes, put the hand, one hand, the right hand, over the eyes, and keep the eyes closed and covered during that sentence of the tefillah. First of all, we know that that's the part in the davening where a person really acknowledges their emunah in Hashem. Believing in Hashem means believing that Hashem is one, and that's the highest praise possible that we could say about Hashem. If you want to say that somebody is very wealthy, very smart, you use numbers, 100, a million, 10 billion, $10 billion, $13 billion is very wealthy. When you want to talk about the wealthiest, the only way to describe it, the difference between 14 billion and 15 billion isn't as significant as saying that this person is one. There's none like him at all whatsoever. And that's the praise that we apply to Hashem, that Hashem is one. That's saying the most special thing that we could possibly say about Hashem. And that's called the declaration of our emunah, our faith in Hashem. Why the eyes closed and covered at that time? The answer Rav Nosson Zal explains is, there is a term that's used in the Zohar HaKadosh, where the terminology is Ulimta Shapirta Delesla Einen, a beautiful maiden that has no eyes. And that's the nickname that's given to Emunah. When we talk about one of the highest goals for a Yid to achieve is Emunah in Hashem, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Kol Mitzvoisecho Emunah, that the tachlis of all the mitzvahs in the Torah is to elevate a Jew. To elevate a Jew to what level? To a level where they're going to get to understand Hashem? That's not possible. That's ridiculous. If we would understand Hashem, we would be Hashem. So no Jew expects to be able to understand Hashem. We try to understand to some little degree certain things that we're given permission to. But the goal of a Jew is supposed to be to really believe in Hashem 100%. To believe that there is Hashem, and to believe in what Hashem wants us to do, and to believe in to what an extent Hashem is in a position to reward and punish based on what we do. So this emunah is called a beautiful maiden without eyes. Why without eyes? The reason it's given is because the definition of emunah, faith, believing, implies in that which you do not understand. If I understand something, or if I see something, then the word believing doesn't apply to say, I believe that this is true. I believe that this is a table. I don't believe it. I see it. I see that it's a table. The fact that I use the term believing implies something that I don't see, or something I don't understand. And understanding and seeing, in many respects, is the same thing also. Because the Pasuk says, by Adam and Chava, when Hashem wants to say that their eyes were opened, the Pasuk says, Vatipokachno Einei Shnehem. Their eyes were filled with knowledge. Pikeach means a very smart person. So that we see that the eyes being opened represents enlightenment, understanding. The concept of Emunah is the opposite of that. A person acknowledging that even though I don't understand, even though I don't see, I still accept and believe. This is the reason why Badafka, when it comes to Shema, we close our eyes and we cover our eyes to show our humbleness and simplicity, that we're acknowledging, that we're accepting Hashem, although we don't see Hashem, although we don't understand everything about Hashem. Now on this, one of the Meforshim, one of the authors of a Breslov Sefer, the Sefer Einig Shabbos, writes a fantastic explanation to something. I would challenge the people present in this Shia tonight, or those that are listening to this tape, to ask any rabbis they want to explain the following item we're going to discuss, without the information that we're going to say now. The Torah says that Hashem gave, during the time that the Eden were in the Midbar, Hashem gave them a certain type of food to eat that was spectacular, phenomenal. This food was on such a madrega of Kiddusha, this food was so holy, that normally we know that when a human being eats, the way that Hashem created food and the way Hashem created the human body is in such a way that the body has to go through a filtering process of taking a certain part of the food and using it, or removing from the body certain other parts of the food that aren't to be used by the body. There is this separation between good and bad that takes place in the eating process. And this process is considered something that's very holy and very significant. And chas v'shalom, if anything ever gets confused inside, where the body were to make a mistake, where Hashem would not allow this to happen in a proper way, chas v'shalom, a person would store the waste matter, and chas v'shalom, eliminate the productive matter, the good part, a person would die very easily. The Gemara says that this special food that Hashem gave the Jews in the Midbar, the mon, was on such a level of Kedusha that there was no need for them to go to the bathroom in eating it. There was no part of it that had to be expelled from the body. It was all perfect. It was all pure. That's the symbol of purity. Zero waste. That's one item that the Gemara says in praising it. The Gemara also explains, talk about praising an object, that this item, the mon, was able to take on any property that the person wanted. If a person wanted to eat any kind of food whatsoever, a person who enjoyed dairy, a person who enjoyed fleishiks, a person who enjoyed a specific type of meat or a specific type of cheesecake, the Gemara says that whatever you thought at the time that you were eating this mon, that's exactly what it tasted like. So that this was a miracle kind of food that was able to take on, it was a cloleus, a combination of everything good, literally. Anything good that you would want, you found in this food. And yet, there's a pasuk in Chumash Dvorim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is reviewing, he's summarizing to the Jews, his whole life and his whole experience in leading them. And one of the statements he made is that during the time that the Yidden were in the Midbar, Vayancho, Vayarivecho, Vayachilcho esamon arboim shona. Vayancho, Hashem made you suffer. Vayar ivecho, and He starved you. He starved Bnei Yisrael. Vayachilcho esamon, and He gave you the mon to eat for 40 years. Arboim shona. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Suffering, starvation, mon? That's a contradiction. The Gemara says, from here we learn out a halacha, a fact of life, that a person that's blind is never full, is never satisfied from what they eat. This is what the Gemara learns out from this pasuk. Why? Because the Gemara says, note, the mon was extraordinary. You could make it taste like anything you wanted by thinking a certain item. If you thought steak, it tasted like steak. If you thought banana cake, it tasted like banana cake. However, looks, it always looked the same. Your thoughts didn't make it change the way it looked. It looked like seeds, kizera gad, lovon, like white seeds. It tasted like whatever you wanted it to. And the Gemara says that, yet the pasuk says that even though this was so pleasurable, in a sense, on one hand, it was considered starving, that they starved because they didn't enjoy it 100%. 100% enjoyment of food is when the lights are on, when you can see it. If you can't see what you're eating, seeing is a major part of the pleasure of eating. This is what the Torah says, this is what the Chumash and the Gemara say about mon. Fine, this is all history. This is telling me about something that took place a few thousand years ago. What purpose does this serve in my knowing about this in 1988, today? And if it doesn't serve a purpose for today, there's no way in the world that this would be written in the Torah. So in this Sefer, the Oinig Shabbos, the author writes, I'm going to explain to you what the message here is, what this mon was. The Torah says that when Hashem gave the mon to the Jews in the Midbar, they saw this food falling down from heaven, and the Gemara says, the Torah says they didn't know, they said, mon hu, what is it? Mon means like what? What is it?
Ki lo yodu mahu, because they didn't know what it was. They saw this strange thing falling. They had never seen it before. So they said, monhu, it is mon. Rabbi Froimel Zal, the author of the Onik Shabbos, says, I'll tell you what this is. What item is there that's so good that it covers everything? It includes every type of good taste in the world. That a person who has this has everything and anything. They could taste any type of delicious taste that they want to in any object in life. That's emunah. If a person believes in Hashem, really believes, such a person, anything that happens to them, they interpret for good. When things are going well for them, when things are going great for them, the person certainly is happy and appreciative and thankful. When things are going what appears to be bad for the person, if you believe that there's a Hashem and that Hashem is everything that the Torah makes him out to be, then whatever's happening to me is for a reason. It's also for my benefit. Could be it's to cleanse me, to save me from a much harsher thing that could happen or that I deserve. In other words, even when Hashem is punishing me and dealing with me in a strict way, in a harsh way, it's very light compared to what I deserve. And everything that Hashem does give me is much, much more than I deserve. So a person is always taking a very positive attitude about Hashem. Rabbi Froimel Zal says, this is what the Torah says. Note, they said, mon hu, it is mon. These two words, mon hu, make up the letters of the word emunah. Aleph, mem, vov, nun, hey. You have the mem, nun in there, and you have the hey, vov, aleph. It is mon makes up the word emunah. That a person that's zechet to believe in Hashem, that's a person whom, whatever they eat, they enjoy it spectacularly. They believe that this comes from Hashem, it's good, it's wonderful. You get a person who really believes in Hashem, they could never say a bad word about any food item, for sure. Because again, whether it tastes delicious or not, if I acknowledge that this is something that Hashem has given me and that Hashem made, which person could chas v'shalom say something bad about it? Or take an attitude that it's bad, it's not good? We have the famous story in the Gemara of one of the rabbis, one of the greatest rabbis of the Gemara, Rabbi Elozo, Rabbi Shimon, who was once coming back home from a shir, and he was in a very happy frame of mind, flying high, and he was riding on his donkey, and he saw a man walking near him that the Gemara says this man looked as disgusting as you could possibly imagine a human being looking. And because Rabbi Elozer was in such a high, happy, gloating frame of mind, in a sense, he looked at this man and he made an insulting remark, saying, look how disgusting you look, or something like that. He just had to say it. It was a combination of circumstances. The way this person looked, there are some times that a person feels compelled, like they must say something, they can't hold it in. And then especially the mood that he was in at the time, the combination forced him to say something. So the Gemara says, this man heard it and said, you didn't insult me just now. You insulted the one who created me. If you think I look so bad, why don't you tell the one who created me that he didn't do such a good job and show him how to do better? The Gemara says the second Rabbi Elazar heard this statement, he stopped the donkey, he got off the donkey, and he realized what he had done. He realized that this man was very right, that if we see a person in this world that doesn't appear to be handsome or something that doesn't taste delicious, the chesaron is in us. If you think that that item is bad, you might be implying that Hashem, that the one who created it, made something bad, made something ugly. Just because you don't see the beauty in it, just because you don't see the good in it, that could be your own short-sightedness. So the Gemara says Rabbi Elazar begged him to forgive him, and he didn't want to. The Gemara says Rabbi Elazar walked behind this person for miles till they got to the city, begging him for forgiveness. And the man said, not interested, take it up with Hashem. And the Gemara says that as soon as they came into the city, the people knew that Rabbi Elozer was coming and he was respected by everybody. So the whole city came out to greet him, to welcome him, to give an honorable welcome to this Rabbi Elozer, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So the Gemara says they saw this man walking in front of him. So, and this man saw all the kavod that they were giving to Rabbi Elazar. He said to them, him you respect? He's nothing. So they said to him, who are you talking about? This is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar said to them, leave him alone. He's right. And he, and the Gemara says, he came into the Beis Medrash, this Rabbi Elazar, and he got up and he darshaned in front of everybody in the city, and he said that a person should always be careful to watch what they say. A person should watch what comes out of their mouth, because you never know, chas v'shalom, you could be saying something, you think you're insulting a person, you're really insulting Hashem. And where's the shortage? The shortage is in emunah. If a person believes, really, really believes in Hashem, and believes that everything comes from Hashem, such a person sees no evil. They don't see anything bad. They don't taste anything bad. Everything that they taste and see and feel is only good. And that's this concept of emunah, which is a certain kind of blindness, where a person is blind to whatever is bad. In other words, it's implying a person is blind to the physical world. When we close our eyes, when we're saying Shema, we're implying I'm closing my eyes to everything that would make me, that would blind me from seeing Hashem. There are so many people who watch everything that's going on around them, and Hashem has designed the world in such a way where Hashem is very hidden. Hashem himself is not obvious. We don't see when the sun rises in the morning. There are people who assume that it's nature, it's natural, it's scientific law, etc. This is part of the greatness of Hashem to hide himself so well. Our emunah, we show our faith in Hashem by covering our eyes and acknowledging, I'm not fooled by what people see, what I see around me, but rather I'm looking further. I'm looking into a spiritual world that I can only see by closing my eyes to the foolishness and silliness that's all around me. This is one of the explanations that's given to this secret of why we cover our eyes during the saying of the Shema.
I can't blame Hashem. I did it myself. And that is bad.
There's a few possibilities here. Let's say certain things that a person does to themselves to harm themselves, a person can't necessarily blame Hashem. Here we were talking specifically about an instance where the person looked a certain way, not based on what they had done, but based on the way Hashem had created them. That's for sure.
And I know that everybody's saying that everything Hashem does
is for the good.
For the good, and everything that Hashem created, if Hashem created something that you can get bad, that's good?
Most definitely. The question is, how do we understand that? The answer is there are certain, to whatever extent, let's say pain, for example, which people assume is a terrible thing. When a person's in pain, it's terrible. Let's use that as an example. We can't go now and explain every single example in the world, but I'll give you one example, which if you accept this example, you have to believe that this could be applied to everything. Item of pain that most people assume is a terrible thing. This person is suffering in pain, and yet people that understand a little more deeply know that pain in all cases, certainly in most cases, is a blessing. Why? Because pain is one of the only ways that a person is informed and made aware that there's an illness, that there's a problem that has to be addressed. Because the nature of many illnesses, especially the serious ones, are that they don't surface until it's too late to treat them, or it's too late to be able to treat them easily. That's one of the most difficult items that the medical profession has to contend with, that usually by the time they can find out what it is that the person's suffering from, it's too late for them to deal with it. So therefore, the Gemara explains that in a sense, pain is a gift in that it's an alarm that goes off that informs the person there's something to be boideg, begashmias, there's something to check on that needs fixing, and certainly it's a reminder that the person has something to be misakin, to fix, baruchni, is spiritually related to that item, whether it be a tooth, a foot, whatever it is. Let's just use this as an example of something that's assumed to be bad, and there's a good in it also, there's a good side to it also. So too with every item in this world, we have to believe that if Hashem made something, obviously there's good in it. If Hashem put it within the potential of a person to become overweight or other items, any items like that, that's also, there definitely has to be something good in it. Otherwise, it couldn't be associated with Hashem, because one of Hashem's names is Toiv, good. We say Toiv Hashem Lakoil. Hashem is good to everybody, for everything. Okay, to summarize, there were 2 points we wanted to make about it. Number one, that the Shema represents accepting, showing emuna in Hashem, faith in Hashem, and faith could only be in that which you don't understand and you don't see. Therefore, we show that by covering our eyes to show that my emuna is emuna in the full sense of the word. That even though I don't understand at all how it's possible, you're going to tell me that Hashem created this world from nothing? That before there was a period of time when this world didn't exist, there was nothing, and from nothing came something. That's something that the human mind is not capable at all of understanding, period. That's one example. There are other examples, the question of Yediyah and Bechira, how it's possible for Hashem to know tonight, on Monday night, Hashem knows 100% what I'm going to be doing tomorrow night. On tonight, Tuesday night, Hashem knows what I'm going to be doing tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and still, when Wednesday night comes, I have Bechira. The Torah testifies that I have free choice to do mitzvahs and to do averos. This is a concept that appears to be contradictory. How it's possible for Hashem to have known clearly yesterday exactly what I'm going to do tomorrow, and yet when tomorrow comes around, even though yesterday it was already known 100% fact what I would be doing, you're telling me that now I have the right, 100%, I have complete freedom to do good or bad, I have bechira. These are things we don't understand, and yet we believe that it's true, because the Torah tells us that there is a Hashem, and that Hashem has given us bechira, these items. So we show that by covering the eyes. That's one explanation. The second point that we mentioned was showing that in order to be able to believe in Hashem, it requires a person closing their eyes to certain things. A person has to realize that there's a sur meira in order to get to the asei toiv. A person has to close their eyes and force themselves not to see, not to look at certain things that would sway a person from emunah in Hashem, in order to be able to see Hashem through emunah. We'll have to leave it at that for now. In going into the Shemoneh Esrei, it's brought in the name of the Arizal that one of the most important introductions to the Shemoneh Esrei is the praise that a person says right before the Shemoneh Esrei, where we say, V'oizer dalim, v'oine la'amo Yisrael, be'eis shava me'lov. Shortly at the end of Ezras Avosenu, one of the long paragraphs in between the Shema and the Shemoneh Esrei, right at the end, we say that Hashem is oizer dalim, Hashem helps the poor, v'oine la'amo Yisrael, and Hashem responds to the Jewish people, be'eis shava me'lov, whenever they call out to Hashem. That's what it says there. The Arizal says that this is the key to a successful Shemoneh Esrei. If a person pauses over here when they're saying this sentence, describing the fact that Hashem helps the poor. Now this term, this word dal, there are several words in the Hebrew language in the Torah that represent a poor person. There's the word oni, there's the word evyoin, there's the word dal, and there are several other words that are used in Lashon Kodesh to mean a poor person. Dal is the word that refers to the poorest of these. The worst poverty case is called a dal. The Chachamim instituted that we say this about Hashem before we're about to start the Shemoneh Esrei, where we're going to be asking Hashem for everything that we need. One of the things we say about Hashem is that Hashem is oizer dalim. That you have a person who's very poor. They come to somebody for help. The person says, if you only needed $100, I could give it to you. You are in such a state of poverty. What you need, I can't give you. You need a house. You need clothing. You need food. You need a brain. You need a face. You need a body. You have broken feet, broken head, broken everything. I don't have enough to give you. By Hashem, that doesn't apply. By Hashem, there doesn't exist a chisorin, there doesn't exist a minus big enough that Hashem can't make it up, that Hashem can't provide it. If a person says, I'm missing 1,000 things, Hashem has 5,000 to give you. There's no problem. So therefore, the Arizal says, when a person says these words, V'ozer dalim, they should stop and concentrate that that's talking about me. That the way I'm present, the attitude that I'm taking about myself in standing before Hashem is that I'm nobody, I'm nothing. I'm poor in every sense of the word poor, certainly spiritually. When I'm standing before Hashem, I feel naked in a spiritual sense. I feel empty. I don't feel any pride compared to how great Hashem is. Anything that I've done so far in terms of religion, in terms of mitzvahs, is zero. In other words, if you tell me about a person, about an ordinary king, for an ordinary king, based on his level of greatness, if I go out and I do ABC for him, I do a certain item for him, this could be considered special. Compared to a human being, let's say a person has a birthday and you bake a birthday cake for them, that's considered special. Let's say a person, a millionaire, has a birthday and somebody would go out and buy them a Parker pen for $1.25, would that person would say that that's an insult. Because of the kind of person you're dealing with, for such a person to get this item, it's not really a praise to the person. It's not really a kavod to the person. On the contrary, it's insulting to the person. So too, when we think of Hashem, we're talking about Hashem is something that we have no concept in. Any concept that we have of greatness, this is infinity. It's way above that. So is it conceivable to say that, wow, I did something for Hashem today? Normally, I would like to sleep till 9 o'clock in the morning. But Hashem said that there's a mitzvah to get up at 7 o'clock to daven. I forced myself, I strained myself, and I forced myself out of bed, and I was willing to accept this much suffering out of respect for Hashem. On one hand, it's wonderful. On the other hand, compared to Hashem's greatness, you can't really say that you did something that you could feel so proud about. So therefore, when a Jew stands before Hashem, the correct attitude is supposed to be complete humbleness, complete poverty. And the Arizal says that guarantees you on that second statement, the Va'oina la'amo Yisrael be'shava melo, that Hashem will definitely respond to your tefillah. If you come to Hashem like somebody who says, I have $300 in my wallet, but Hashem, if you could give me a $400, I'd appreciate it, it'd be a nice thing. That Hashem doesn't respond to so quickly. The person comes to Hashem with an attitude, Hashem, I'm nothing, I'm nobody, and you are everything. And therefore, I'm coming and begging you to provide me with whatever you understand I need. I don't even have the intelligence to understand everything that I need. You, Hashem, understand better than I do everything that I need. If a person comes with that attitude, such a person is guaranteed that their tefillah will be accepted very quickly. And this is also tied in with the opening sentence of the Shemoneh Esrei, where we say, Hashem, sefosai tiftoch, Ufi yagid tehilosecha, Hashem, open my lips and allow me to speak, allow my mouth to speak your praises. What does it mean when a person is saying that? What does that mean, Hashem sfosai tiftoch ufi yagid tehilosecha? The Meforshim explain that when a person is standing before Hashem and wants to talk, where are you supposed to get words from to say? Where are you supposed to get good thoughts from, or the power to concentrate? When one person finds that the davening Shemoneh Esrei, and 95% of the time, their mind is somewhere else. They're not concentrating on what they're saying. And another person is able to concentrate 100% on what they're saying. Or another person, when they come to speak to Hashem in their own language, their own tefillah, they find that they have words to say. Where do those words come from? The words must come from Hashem himself. There's a place in the Navi where it says, Psach picho le'ilem. Hashem, please, I am a mute. I have no words. Hashem, open my mouth and give me words to say. And this is our opening line in the Shemoneh Esrei, where we say, Hashem, you open my lips. That implies, give me words to say and give me the concentration. Give me the power to speak to you the right way. Here again, when I go to a president or some other king, ridiculous. I can't ask him for words to say. It's either I have it or I don't.
The point is, for example, you get a person who's coming into a bank, ask for a loan. A person needs $10,000. Let's say a person wants to go out and buy a new house. A person that has a house, they're living in a house, and they want to enlarge their house, a home improvement loan. A person needs an additional $5,000 from the bank to do it. That person comes in with a certain, usually, the person is coming in with a certain type of attitude. The person is coming in not like a schlepper, not like he's begging the bank for some charity. He's not walking in saying, I don't have anything, could you give me a handout? He's coming in saying, these are my credentials. I need a loan from you for $5,000 right now. However, that's not to say that I'm a beggar or I'm a pauper. I have a house that's worth $300,000. I have a job which pays me $600 a day for what I do. I have a yerusha of $4 million that's invested in time deposits where I can't touch it for a year. But I'm richer than the bank. It's just that right now, I want to borrow these $5,000 to do this thing for my loan. That person's coming in with a certain kind of attitude where on one hand they're acknowledging they need something, but they're also standing there feeling that they have something. I have 50 items, I'm missing 50 items, and I'm asking you for one of the 50 items that I'm missing. That's one type of attitude that a person could have. The Arizal explains that when a Jew comes before Hashem to ask for things, part of the one of the biggest nachasim for Hashem is for the person to understand how small they are in standing before Hashem. That when a person is standing before Hashem, whether the person is very wealthy, or whether the person is very smart, a big chacham, or whether the person is very strong, the Torah says, don't feel proud. Stay compared to Hashem, your smarts don't mean anything,
your wealth doesn't mean anything, and your strength doesn't mean anything. And therefore Hashem wants to see bitul. Hashem wants to see a person standing before Hashem feeling like nothing before Hashem. And that's one of the important ingredients in tefillah. We say on Shabbos, Shavas aniyim atos ishma, tzakas hadal takshiv esoshia, that Hashem listens to the tefillos of a poor person, implying even if you're rich, even if you're a millionaire, either in Gashmias or in Ruchnias, but you present yourself like a poor person, that's what Hashem wants to see. Hashem wants to see that you realize that compared to Hashem, nobody's rich. Nobody has anything to feel great about. Regarding the Shmoneh Esrei itself, it's interesting that it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch that even though there are 19 brachas total, that's what we have today, it started originally as 17 brachos, and then the Gemara says at one point in time they added an 18th, which was Es Tzemach David Avdecha Meheres Atzmiach, that was added on afterwards. And then still at a later date, they added on the bracha of V'lamalshinim Al Tehi Sikva. This was based on certain incidents that happened in Jewish history. The Gemara says that the most important one for a person to concentrate on, in terms of from a halacha standpoint, is the opening bracha of the Shmoneh Esrei. When you begin the Shmoneh Esrei and you say, Brother Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, v'Elokei Yaakov, that opening bracha, a person has to make sure to have kavona, meaning to be concentrating on what they're saying. And if you could understand the words, that's the best. If you could understand in your own language the translation of the words and be concentrating on that as you're saying it, that's the best. If not, if a person doesn't understand Hebrew, then we suggest that they go out and learn it. Or get an English sitter that you can look in and glance in and start picking up an understanding of what those words mean. But let's say until a person gets that understanding, what a person should do is have in mind that Hashem does understand the meaning of what I'm saying, and Hashem should take the words that I'm saying and put it together to formulate the thought that it's supposed to formulate. It's interesting to note how serious this is. According to the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, if a person didn't have kavona on that first bracha of Shmoneh Esrei, they're required to go back and say it again. Because if you weren't concentrating and thinking about what you were saying, if you were thinking about a cake in the oven, or you were thinking about what's for supper or something like that, the person has to go back and repeat that bracha. That's according to the Bet Yosef. The Ramah, who is the chief Ashkenazic posek, says that unfortunately, nowadays, our brains are so small and so weak that if we're going to tell a Jew to go back and say it over, the second time, they won't concentrate again. They'll forget what they're saying again, and they'll end up saying it a third time, fourth time. So therefore, he says, we can't allow you to go back and say the bracha over again. In other words, he's just telling us what level we're considered to be on nowadays. But again, this is just to let us know how serious it is for a person to be concentrating on what they're saying, especially for that first bracha. Interesting to note that during Shemoneh Esrei itself, a person is not supposed to be looking out of a sitter at all whatsoever, unless they know the Shemoneh Esrei by heart, in which case they're keeping their eyes closed 100% during the Shemoneh Esrei, either closed or looking into the sitter. And in the Shulchan Aruch, it's written that there is a special malach in Shemayim who's appointed over the following task, that those Jews who during Shemoneh Esrei allowed their eyes to look out of the sitter, this malach, when that person passes away, takes a huge rod, steel rod, and Rachman al-San smashes the person's eyes. Now the question is, if a person is not alive, do they feel the pain? Obviously, if the Gemara is saying this, the implication is that there is some kind of a serious pain involved. And again, the Gemara wants us to know how strict this is of not looking out of the sitter during Shemoneh Esrei. And again, certainly keeping one's feet together at the time, the appearance that we have is standing before Hashem like an angel. The Gemara describes the Malachim that a Malach stands on one foot. And when we're standing during Shemoneh Esrei, we're taking on the form like a Malach standing before Hashem. That's one item. Another point of information we shouldn't skip, when a person begins Shemoneh Esrei, you're supposed to take three steps back. When a person says, right before a person says Goal Yisrael, they're taking three steps back and three steps forward, going into the Shemoneh Esrei. At that point in time, the question is, what's our reason for taking the three steps back, and what's the reason for taking the three steps forward? The Meforshim explain that the three steps back imply that I'm leaving the physical world completely. The three steps forward imply that I'm entering into the throne room of Hashem, Kaviyachol. Literally, that Shemoneh Esrei is different from Shemoneh Esrei. Shemoneh Esrei is different from Kriya Shema, different from Yishtabach, different from Baruch Shomar. When a person is saying Shemoneh Esrei, they're literally in the throne room of Hashem. And as such, that's the reason for this walking back and walking forward. A person is supposed to stand up when they get to Hilois Lekel Elyon. A person can start the three steps back at that point. And upon finishing Goal Yisrael is when you're taking the three steps forward, yes. In the Zohar HaKodesh it's brought that Tehillos Lekel Elyon is the place where you stand up. Excuse me? No, I think Tehillos Lekel Elyon is also a place that a person should go back also. Go back the three steps. No. One time Tehillos Lekel Elyon going three steps back, and then at Goal Yisrael, going the three steps forward. Before. The right. Excuse me? You're talking about before Shemoneh Esrei or after Shemoneh Esrei? Right. I would want to check on that to confirm it. At the end of Shemoneh Esrei, you're definitely going back with the left foot because it's the weaker foot. You want to show a slowness in leaving the presence of Hashem. Before, don't think, we'll check the Shulchan Aruch and see what the right thing is. That's the three steps. At Tehillos Lekel Elyon, to go the three steps back. One interesting point regarding this item, while a person is standing Shemoneh Esrei, a person isn't supposed to move at all whatsoever. Not move, certainly not move to walk out of the Shemoneh Esrei itself. There was an incident that our Rebbe Zichron Levracha told of a story that he himself experienced, where his Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva Torah Vadas, who was Rav Gedal Yeshua, they were once, the boys in the class were standing davening Shemoneh Esrei, and one of the boys in the class fainted in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. and nobody knew what to do. In other words, you're standing Shemon Esrei, the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to move. If a snake is curled around your foot, you're not supposed to move. The question is, what do you do in this case? And they saw that instantly, as soon as the Talmud fell, the Rebbe jumped out of his Shemon Esrei immediately and went over to see what to do and if he was okay. He didn't speak at all. The Rebbe didn't speak because there wasn't a need to, but because the child came out of it right away. But they learned from this clearly that certainly in such an instance, a person is permitted to and obligated to run right away to help somebody, if Chas V'Shalom, something like that would have happened. Also interesting to note, if a person is standing Shemon Esrei, and let's say they have a sitter and they notice the sitter they're using doesn't have Alanisim, or something like that, or a person standing Shemon Esrei, and they forgot, they didn't realize that they need Yalla V'Yavo. They thought that they could say Shemon Esrei by heart, and they didn't realize they have to say Yalla V'Yavo, or something like that they don't know by heart. You are permitted in that case to walk in the middle of Shemon Esrei, go get a sitter, come back, and continue where you were up to. Naturally, this is not preferred. Person before they start Shemon Esrei should have a sitter with everything in it that they need. In a case of an emergency, the halacha is that you're permitted to and supposed to get the sitter so that you can say whatever you have to say. Final item for now. Regarding if a person would chas v'shalom drop their sitter, the sitter itself during Shemon Esrei, or certainly drop if a page falls out of the sitter, is a person allowed to bend down to pick that up during Shemon Esrei? The halacha is no. If a sitter falls down during Shemon Esrei, you're not supposed to pick it up. That's the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch says, however, if you are a person who you could not possibly continue your Shemon Esrei and concentrate, knowing that there's a sitter on the floor and it's going to be there for another 2 minutes until you finish your Shemon Esrei, then you're allowed to bend down to pick it up. In other words, we need to know that the basic, the halacha, the initial halacha is, no, you're not supposed to move in the middle of Shemon Esrei. They're not davening without a sitter, let somebody else get you a sitter or something like that. In other words, you're not supposed to move in the middle of your Shemon Esrei. Unless, if the reason to move is something that unless you do it, you're not going to be able to concentrate on your Shemon Esrei, then you're allowed to do it. Then you're allowed to pick it up. Naturally, in this case, we were talking about somebody that could say it without the sitter. Even in that case, if the fact that the sitter is lying there would make them feel they couldn't concentrate, they're permitted to.